Okay, we're good to go. So tonight we are going to be in Ruth chapter 3. And I just need to take a quick look at faces. Okay, so it appears that no one has read ahead because you're not crying. So if you had cried, you either A, would not have showed up tonight, which makes me think Bill probably read ahead, or you would be extremely upset. There is a very popular series out on HBO that I'm sure many people have heard of. It's called Game of Thrones. And there is an episode in this show called The Red Wedding. And I forget what season it's in, 3 or 4, something like that. And I'm not going to give it away, but just know The Red Wedding is a tragic episode. And so I saw a clip that came across the internet several years ago when it went through that episode. And it said, now everyone who has a bunch of nerds for a friend know why they were depressed for like a week. And it was referring back to the people who had read the books, and they got to the point in The Red Wedding and they just went into a deep dark depression for like a week. And everybody's like, why are you, we know you're a loser, but why are you such a loser this week? And now they knew after they'd seen the show. Well, if you were watching a movie of the book of Ruth, chapter 3 is going to be the red wedding of Ruth. It's going to be the time, I'll just tell you, where I'm going to rip the carpet out from under you. And you think, how is that possible? In chapter 1, for goodness sakes, we have Naomi who loses her husband, who loses her 2 sons, who is cast out of her land because of a famine, and she's now going back destitute and empty to face sure starvation and a slow death as a widow. If that's not starting out with the rug under your, out from under your feet, I can't imagine how it's going to get worse. Well, just wait. So tonight we are going to see other twists of fate here. But in Ruth chapter 3, it begins. Let's back up and review where we're at. And so in Ruth chapter 1, Naomi and Ruth return to the land. They return to Bethlehem where Naomi is from. And Ruth has devoted her life to Naomi. And in chapter 2, we see to what level she does that. In the fact that she goes out and she begins to glean in the fields. And we spent a lot of time last week talking about this idea of gleaning. And I hope that, the idea that Christians and the followers of God at this time, the Israelites, were to take care of people who were working hard, who God had put twists into their life, who had put them into a base position in society, but those people who were willing to go out and work this week, God says you take care of them. And so I hope that in this past week, if you've gone out to eat somewhere, that it has affected the tip that you left. And that it has affected the way you treated your wait staff. And it's affected the way you treat your garbage man. And it's affected the way you treat all of those other people who are out working hard, who are cleaning the corners of the field today, and that you're dropping grain for them. And that you're taking a mentality of Boaz. That's what we are to take from this, is to see Boaz as an example to us of what it means to be godlike in a very practical way. If you have employees, I hope you greeted them with joy and kindness as Boaz greeted his employees in chapter 2. And if you see people who are going above and beyond, who are struggling and striving, I hope that you looked upon them with grace, the same way that Boaz looked upon Ruth and saw what it meant for her to leave her father and her mother and the land of her nativity and her gods and to come to a people that she knew not heretofore. And that you bless them not just by praying for them, not just by taking them to the Lord, but that you bless them with your own resources, with your own time, with your own presence. And so as we come through chapter 2, we see that Boaz has taken affection with Ruth. And when I say affection, it's not just that he is attracted to her, but he loves her. And he treats her very kindly. And she goes home and she explains to Naomi what Boaz has done for her. And Naomi says, don't let them find you anywhere else but by his maidens and in his fields. And Ruth the Moabitess told her that she was going to stay by his young men. And so she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest. And she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Now, last week we talked about that when you have an account like this, a story like this, it's very important that you pay attention to the details that the author puts in, because they choose these details deliberately. But they also are writing a very short account. They have very limited space here, and so there are a lot of things that they leave out. And so this week we're going to have to fill in some blanks based on what we read and then press this against the human nature that we are all aware of, because we are human beings, and we're going to have to fill in some blanks for ourselves here, okay? So know that between chapter 2, verse 22, and chapter 3, verse 1, and that chapter 2, verse 23, and that one verse, a long time has passed, okay? Because they didn't have combines. They did not have tractors. So a barley harvest is not something that gets done in a week. And on top of that, it says that she stays through the wheat harvest as well. So over the course of weeks or perhaps even months, we skip from Ruth chapter 2, verse 22, through verse 23 and into Ruth chapter 3, verse 1. So a large amount of time passes here. This is not a matter of just a couple of days. And so after this amount of time has passed, and all of this time we know that Ruth has stayed close by Boaz's servant, she has stayed in his fields, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, says unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. All right, so here's what we got. Ruth is out working. Naomi is at home, in town, in and around Bethlehem. And she is, well, I'm going to say this respectfully, and I know which two people sitting beside each other tonight are going to throw their Bibles at me. But what, in a situation like this, what do you think all of the elderly women in town do during the day? I don't know. Pat and Brenda, would you all like to answer that? Okay, good. All right. Brenda and I have a talk every week about what it means to be old versus older. And so she brings it up, not me. So the whole time this is going on, Naomi is in town. And throughout these months, know that what is going on between Ruth and Boaz is not a secret. These things are never secret. Whether it be within a church, whether it be within a community, whether it be within a family, these kinds of things are never secret, no matter how hard two people try to be discreet, two people try to be to keep their feelings apart and things like that. You can tell when you're in a room with a bunch of people and you're carrying on a conversation with a young man or even an older man, and a certain female walks in the room, you know, you don't even have to see her walk in. You can know she walked in by the look on his face or the stutter that hits his voice. And it goes the same way as well. There are women who can be sitting there and they're talking, and a gentleman walks into the room and their face flushes and everything just changes. And they just try not to even break stride in the sentence, but you just know, oh, he must be here, because you went right in the middle of your sentence, okay? So these things are not hidden. And Naomi and the other women who are in the town, they see what's going on here. They notice things like Boaz going to the field more often than normal. And they notice how much Ruth brings in every evening. I told you last week that what they were used to bringing in was something close to a handful or two handfuls in an entire day's work, just enough food to survive that night and go back out the next day. It says that on the first day she was there, she beat out an ephah. That's 30 pounds. So you think about a 50-pound bag of dog food, she beat out more than half that much. These things don't go unnoticed. And so Naomi says to her, Naomi's been thinking through this. She's been watching this develop. And she says, now I know. Now we're going to move tonight. Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that you shall mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Okay? So here's what's going on. The way that this would work, this winnowing thing, again, they didn't have combines, so when they had one of these harvests, they would take the grain and they would go up on top of a hill, a flat place, like a plateau, where there's a constant breeze blowing through. And they would take, I wish I'd brought it, I have one of these winnowing baskets in my Jeep that Vozenthal sent back from India a couple of years ago. And so they take this big pan and they put the barley in and they shake it and they throw it up in the air and it comes back down. They shake it and they throw it in the air and it comes back down. And when it goes up in the air, the chaff, the dust is blown away by the breeze, but all of the grain falls back down into the basket. And so they sit there and they'll do this all day long. And they'll have, they developed, I don't know when these were developed, so they, I don't know if they had them then or not, but they would have these big winnowing rakes. And they would take these humongous rakes and they would put it into the grain and they would throw it up in the air and it'd come back down. They put it in and throw it up in the air and it'd come back down. And this is not a one-man job. So she says, mark the place where he lies because there are many men there. This is a group effort. And they would stay there all night because they have to guard. This is their money. So they have to guard this harvest. And so there will be many men there and they will be laid out strategically around this big mound of grain, protecting the grain so that robbers don't come in and steal it, working throughout the night. When does the wind blow mostly? During the middle of the day? No, and it's miserable hot then. So especially in the evenings, early in the mornings, they would be up doing this and then they got done. They would eat, they would have their supper, and then they would go and lie down. So she says, you wait till they all lay down. And then, and this gets weird, and we're going to talk about this. Then you sneak in amongst all of them, and you lay down at his feet, and you uncover his feet, and then be real quiet. Now, why would she uncover his feet? Don't overthink it. To wake him up. Nobody sleeps well with their feet uncovered. Right? So she uncovers his feet and then she lays there. He's going to get cold. And he's going to go to kick to find his covers. And he's going to find a body. Ooh! Right? Well, guess what? That's exactly what happens. So sure enough, she goes down to the floor and she did according to all her mother-in-law had bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of the corn. And she came softly and she uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself. And behold, a woman laid his feet. Oh, that's never fun. I don't know. Trina, I have no idea. But and he says, who are you? And she answers, I'm Ruth, thy handmaid. Now listen to what she says here. This is the critical verse of chapter 3. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. Now, there are some times that if I had a time machine and I could go back in time, one of my top 10 lists is to go back and find the men who translated the King James Version of the Bible and punch them in the face. Because sometimes they choose words that are completely crooked for the application of what is going on. And this is one of those times. Okay? So I want you to look at this word skirt. This gets people all tore up. And I have heard many people who tried to twist this verse into something inappropriate and completely out of context and to turn it into something filthy. And I'm going to stop that right now. Because there's nothing, there's no innuendo in what he says here. And what she says here when she says, "Spread therefore thy skirt over mine hand, over thine handmaid." Now I want everybody to turn to Ezekiel chapter 16. Everyone turn to Ezekiel chapter 16. Well, ask Mama to help you. See? Now you share with Mama because this is probably not in your picture Bible. Okay? So in Ezekiel chapter 16 and go to verse 8. Now this is God speaking to Israel. And we've gone to this chapter once before. And he's speaking to Israel and he's describing the time that he found Israel. And he describes Israel as a newborn baby that has been thrown out into a field and left to die. That's how he describes them. And he says that in verse 5, "None I pitied thee to do unto thee, or to have compassion upon thee. Thou wast cast out in the open field, in the loathing of thy person, in the day thou wast born." But then he describes his redemption of Israel. And in verse 8, he says, "Now when I passed by thee and looked upon thee, behold, thy time was the time of love. And I spread my skirt over thee and covered thy nakedness. Yea, I swear unto thee and entered into a covenant with thee, saith the Lord God, and thou becamest mine." Now that is the context of what Ruth is asking Boaz here. And a better interpretation of that word in Ruth chapter 3 is the word wings. Is the word wings. In fact, the Hebrew word, I looked this up, is kanaf. And it means the edge or extremity, specifically of a bird or army. So it's like a wing. And it is used 108 times throughout the King James Version, and 74 of those times it is wing. Okay? Now, why is that significant in the story of Ruth? That Ruth says, "Spread your wing over me." Now, think really hard. Where have we heard that word wing before in this study? Does anybody remember? This is not a hypothetical. If you remember, say so. Where else have we heard the word wing in this study? All right, go back up to Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. Boaz is speaking to Ruth and says, "The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou hast come to trust." So now, what Ruth is doing here is she is using the same words that Boaz used to say, "I'm trying to trust in you the same way you gave me credit for trusting in the Lord." And she's asking Boaz to spread his wings over her the same as God did. So this is a very poetic way of saying, "Boaz, will you marry me?" Now that seems weird, doesn't it? It does to me. Especially in a society like this. And now we understand why Naomi has to plot the plan. Because, do you think that Ruth can just come up to Boaz in the middle of the day and say, "Would you marry me?" Not in this society, not in today's society. Could she even do that? She's much more likely to be able to pull it off today. But nothing like that in this society that they are in. And so she finally says, Naomi has finally had enough, is what it comes down to. She sees what's going on. It's obvious, but it's also obvious that these two individuals are both trying to remain discreet in all of this. And we don't really understand why until we get to verse 10. And look at what Boaz says in response. Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch that thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. Now we get this sense. Boaz is an old dude. He calls her daughter. And he says, your kindness is greater at the end than it was at the beginning. So what he's saying is you are taking even greater notice of me than you did of Naomi. Now think, he is the nearest kinsman, most likely a first cousin of Elimelech. So he's probably very close to the same age as Elimelech, who was her father-in-law. So this is not just a platitude when he calls her daughter. He is much older. Now, I don't know about this, but I got a pretty good sense. So I'm 39. I'll be 40 in September. And I hope that Trent and I celebrate 75 years together, right? Because that means that we would be like 93. Okay? But if we don't, and she were to pass away, I would feel really weird, no matter how obvious it was, about asking someone Hope's age to marry me. Hope doesn't like that. She's ready to claw my eyes out. It would be weird. It would be awkward. And so, Naomi is sitting back here from town, and she sees these two, and she knows that Ruth probably talks at the end of the day, how was your day today? Oh, it was fine. Everything was good. Did Boaz come? Yes. Right? And so she knows how Ruth feels. It's clear how Boaz feels. It's like dealing with two dunces that just will not admit what's obvious to everyone else. And she says, enough. Enough. I'm stepping into this thing now. Mothers sometimes do that. Right? And so she steps in and she says, I've had enough. Tonight we move. But it's got to be discreet. It cannot be in a way that would embarrass Boaz. And you never know. He might say no. Remember I said we're going to get the rug pulled out from under us tonight? Boaz might say, I really appreciate you doing that, but it just can't be that way because I'm old. So let's see what happens. Sadie's about to punch me in the face. So let's see what happens. So he says, blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now, it's true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than me. Boaz doesn't get to take Ruth as his wife. I'm sorry, Sadie. He doesn't. Because there's one family member who's closer. So you know what that tells me? Boaz has been thinking about this too. And the reason that Boaz hasn't, quote unquote, pulled the trigger on this is because he's not allowed. Now why? Why is this a problem? He goes on down and he says this in 13. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, just lie down until the morning. Now there's two things I want to look at right here. Number one, and both of these declare, proclaim the honor of Boaz. Remember that we said last week, the position of being the Gaol in the Jewish society was a great position of honor. To be the person who was able to redeem land, to buy people out of slavery, to buy people out of their debts, to take care of a family in a way that no one else in the family can do, was a great honor. And for Boaz to undercut this other near kinsman would be to disrespect that man. So Boaz is not the patriarch of this family, this other near kinsman is. And so he says, I want to do this. I've been thinking about doing this. This is my heart's desire, but I cannot disrespect and dishonor this other man. He comes first in this family, and I've got to go to him. And the second thing I want you to look at is what he tells her. Lie down until the morning. And then it says, and she lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose up before anyone could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Now, sometimes when we read the Bible, we assign a level of piety and holiness to biblical characters that is unrealistic. Men have not changed in 6,000 years, and neither have women. How many texts did you get last night? You. From the time you and Malachi left my house until you came back home. How many texts did you get last night?
A lot.
You got a lot. Because there was a plan. There was a number of waypoints to be reached. And then there was a return trip. And somewhere in there, the plan got deviated. Which was fine. It means that you didn't go where you said you were going to go. And so suddenly, there was a tracker. And we're figuring out what's going on. Because in 6,000 years, women have not changed, and neither have men. And certainly not in the last 22 years since her mother and I were dating. So, the tracker went out. There's no difference between these two, except that they have a lot of honor. Now, for the record, I tracked wherever Hope went, and she went to fine places, and I'm good with it. Okay. But Boaz has an opportunity here. Here is a woman laying at his feet who has expressed her love and affection for him, and he clearly loves her, he desires her, and they do nothing. Nothing. He says, you just lie here, and I'll take care of it in the morning. And that's as far as that relationship goes that night. And so she does. So twice, in one verse, we see twice the honor of Boaz and his conduct as a godly man. And in the morning she gets up and he takes her veil and she holds it out and he fills it 6 measures of barley and laid it on her and she went into the city. I promise you she didn't sneak out as easy as she snuck in because he loads her down. All right, so that's like 6 measures would be somewhere around 18 pounds of grain in her veil. And so now she's trying to carry this Santa Claus bag back to town with all of this barley. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? Meaning, what's your last name now? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. And then she said, sit still, my daughter, until thou knowest how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he has finished the thing this day. And the very next thing that we see on this page is a great big 4. Which means you don't get to find out what happens for 7 days. And with that, I'm going to pause this thing. And We're going to break into our groups. And let me remind you of what it says at the bottom of your question sheets. Be as honorable as Boaz for your reading assignment. Do not read ahead.